88. And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. I am your host, Yo. This, of course, is the show where we want to challenge you, encourage you, and most of all, get you to think. And tonight we're going to tackle a very important topic, a topic that a lot of people don't like to talk about. It's not one that we like to think about or acknowledge, especially when it comes to Christians. We just don't want to know or believe that something like this could happen amongst Christians. Tonight, we're going to talk about the emotionally destructive relationship. Our special guest tonight is Leslie Vernick. She is a licensed clinical social worker. She has a master's degree in social work from the University of Illinois, and she's been counseling people for over 25 years. She's the author of several books, including the one that we're talking about tonight, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship. Leslie Vernick, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Certainly appreciate your time this evening.
Hi, yeah, I'm glad to be there.
Now, let me just start off by saying, I'm going to be brutally honest here. When I was reading through your book and I got to the part where you go through that little quiz, you know, to see if you're in an emotionally destructive relationship, I went through that and I answered some of those questions, and I got in the car when my wife picked me up and I said, "I'm so sorry. You're in an emotionally destructive relationship. I didn't know I was doing this to you." She laughed at me and she said, "What are you talking about? I feel nothing but loved and cared for and cherished. There's no way." And so I said, "Yeah, okay, go through the test. You'll see." And so she goes through it and she said, "Well, I don't know. I don't think we're in an emotionally destructive relationship, but obviously this test has brought out that there's a few things that we're doing that aren't exactly emotionally healthy." And so within the first couple chapters, I already realized, there's some changes I should make in some of my behavior patterns. And just that alone, I am grateful that I got a chance to read your book. So, and the reason I wanted to mention that is just to show, you know, you may be doing stuff and you don't even realize that it could be harmful. So thank you for pointing that out, at least in my own life, Leslie.
Well, I'm glad that you saw that, and I'm glad that you haven't been to a place where those patterns became that destructive yet.
Yeah, and when I saw some of the things that were brought out in your book, I made the resolve. I was like, well, I'm going to make sure that doesn't, you know, evolve into anything that could ever become in any way harmful. And so it was useful for me in that, and it was also useful just because it made me made me more aware of how I should treat other people just in general, you know, not just with the people that I'm married to, that I'm, you know, the father to, that I'm a son to, but just people in general, how I can treat them in a way that really reflects more the love of Christ. And so I appreciate that you wrote this book. And I don't know how you do what you do, Leslie. It's got to be tough, isn't it?
Well, it is, because I am somewhat of an idealist, and so it's you know, I know that God's heart is for relationships, and God's heart is about loving relationships and good relationships and healthy relationships, but so many of us grow up in homes where we didn't learn that, and we didn't experience that, and so we sort of just do what we know, and even as Christians, we know the right things to do intellectually or theoretically, but actually doing them is a whole lot harder. And
yeah.
So I work with lots of people who aren't doing so well at relationships.
And I think the thing that a lot of people might have a hard time coming to grips with is that this is something that can even infiltrate good Christian marriages, that an emotionally destructive relationship can happen in a Christian home. And, of course, the natural question is, well, how could that be?
Well, you know, because we're sinners, for one thing, and so we're going to all have some pain and suffering in all of our relationships. That doesn't necessarily at all mean it's a destructive relationship. It could just be a difficult relationship. But because we're sinners, there's pain and suffering in every relationship. But what makes a destructive relationship different than just a difficult one is a couple things. One is that the patterns of behavior result in someone being torn down or inhibiting their growth, so that the destruction part of it is that you're tearing someone's selfhood or personhood down, or inhibiting them to grow into the person that God wanted them to be. And also there's a lack of awareness. Like you said, there was a lack of awareness in your own life. There's a lack of awareness, a lack of remorse. Once you become aware, like that didn't happen for you. You became aware and you said, "Wow, I'm really sorry." But for many people, even if they become aware, they say, "Well, that's too bad. That's just the way I am," or "I'm not going to change," or "It's not my fault," or "It's your fault." And so it's our lack of remorse and our unwillingness to take responsibility for our own behaviors and change them that then becomes more and more destructive.
You know, some people would think that the very fact that you are a Christian, that you are indwelt with the Holy Spirit, that you're going to church every Sunday, should naturally negate these types of behaviors, and yet that doesn't really happen. Why do you think that even in the church, people can still fall into this despite the fact that, you know, we're supposed to be learning to love like Christ loved?
Well, again, I think it's two factors. One is that we still are sinners, and so even though we're Christians and we're indwelt by the Holy Spirit, we still have habits of sin. The Apostle Paul talks about putting off your former way of life. And so I don't think that's a once and done, I came to the cross and now I'm a new person, practically. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, true theologically, but it's not true in our habits.
Mm-hmm.
And so although our heart may have been cleansed and changed, part of our work in sanctification is to then let that repentance show its fruit in our habits. And for many people, one of the ways we understand that maybe they really haven't repented of anything is there is no change in their habits. And so maybe their heart hasn't really changed either, because God says very clearly that the heart change leads to the habit change. Unfortunately, it doesn't all happen at once. And so as we change our habits, sometimes we have some very bad habits, and we've learned some very bad habits and ways of interacting with people.
Now, let's define for everyone who may be a little unclear exactly what it is that we're talking about. Define for us, what is an emotionally destructive relationship?
Okay, it's not usually determined by one single incident of bad behavior, but rather it's patterns of repetitive actions or attitudes. And I've identified five specific patterns that I think are injurious to relationships, and if they're left untended or unchanged, they will lead to destruction. And one is, obviously, whenever there's any kind of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, like verbally humiliating someone, name-calling, degrading, those kind of verbal abusive relationships. But also there's other kinds of relationships that aren't necessarily labeled or thought of as abusive but are also destructive. For example, one where someone's very controlling over another person. They might be overprotective or overbearing, but they, you know, kind of don't use verbal assault to maintain control. They may use spiritual principles like, you know, I'm the head of the home and I get my way all the time, or they might use, you know, pastor might say, I know God better than all of you, and so I know what God's telling me, and this is what we need to do this way. And it's a very controlling where I am right all the time and you're wrong all the time. And that can be destructive over a pattern of a relationship in that you're inhibiting another person's growth and development. Another kind of relationship that's also destructive is a dependent relationship where one person depends on another for all of their emotional well-being, for all of their needs to be met. No one person can meet all of our needs. And so when you are a grown-up and you're overly dependent on people, that can become a destructive relationship. Another kind of relationship that becomes destructive is where there's deceit. Not just blatant lying, but also just pretending, evading, shading, manipulating, twisting things, saying one thing when you mean another. So the other person doesn't really know who you are, and you sort of leave the relationship sometimes scratching your head saying, I know this happened, or I know I said this, and yet they're saying this never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so when those things happen consistently in a relationship and the other person doesn't take any responsibility for it, then yes, that can be destructive. And then the last kind of relationship is an indifferent relationship, and I don't think we talk about that at all in the church. You know, what do you do when two people are married and they don't even talk to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Or one doesn't talk to the other? They're indifferent. They just don't care. And yet they're still married, and they're saying they're Christians, and yet they don't act as if they care about the other person's well-being, their feelings, their thoughts. And so that becomes destructive.
You know, it seems like a lot of this is stuff that we don't really talk about a lot in the church. You don't hear very much about these types of behaviors. I mean, you hear that, yeah, it's wrong to hit someone, but when you go into some of these other types of behaviors, you just don't hear a lot of that discussed from the pulpit or in small groups. Why do you think it is that we as Christians seem to want to be willfully ignorant of this?
That's a really good word, willfully ignorant about this. You know, I think that we have minimized the consequences of this kind of relationship. I think we've thought that maybe that old nursery rhyme, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I think we thought that was from the scriptures or something, because we've sort of said to people that, you know, well, you know, just develop a tougher skin, or, you know, that's, you know, just let it roll off your back, or, you know, it was just words, don't let it bother you. And, you know, the Bible says that words are very powerful. The Bible says that life and death is in the power of the tongue. Mm-hmm. And what we say to people can profoundly wound their spirit. Some people who have been verbally wounded by others have told me it's far worse than physical abuse.
Yeah, I can believe that. I can think of a few things I was called in the playground that still linger.
Yeah, and so we sort of have minimized that. We've sort of told people not to let it bother them without realizing that that's very serious, and God says it's very serious. And I don't know that we know how to talk about it, because we don't know what to do about it. Well, what do you do? And one of the reasons I wrote this book was because I work with a lot of people in destructive relationships, and they feel very shy or timid about doing anything because they feel like God is just telling them to stay put and just put up with it. That's the good Christian thing to do, and I don't think that's what God tells us to do at all. And so I wanted to give people a biblical understanding for what destructive relationships are like and what God tells us to do about them.
Now, one of the things I noticed as I was going through your book and reading about some of these different behaviors, different signs of an emotionally destructive relationship, it seemed like a running theme through a lot of this type of abuse was the idea of selfishness, that a lot of this just stems from people being very self-centered. How can a selfish attitude not only be conducive to an emotionally destructive behavior, but also lead, perhaps, to other forms of abuse?
Well, you know, when we... Our whole culture is selfish. I have another book out called How to Find Selfless Joy in a Me First World, and I really talk about this in the church because we're just so self-centered and self-oriented, and we sort of disguise that as a virtue these days, but it's really quite sinful. But when we're selfish, we kind of worship at the gods of me, mine, and more, and if you get in my way, you know, I'm going to love things and use people. I'm not going to love people and use things anymore. And so we use people to get what we want, and if it means that I hurt you, or if it means I step on you, or if it means I have to let you go in order to get what I want, then that's what I'm going to do. And it's all about us and what we want, what we need, what we feel, what's important to us, and that can cause a lot of destruction in relationships. I talk about that throughout the book, and in terms of the heart themes, the selfish heart, the heart that's oriented completely around themselves.
Now, I was doing a little bit of research. Again, I say I was doing, my research assistant was doing a lot of research for this program and focusing a lot on one of the results that an emotionally destructive relationship can lead to is other types of abuse. And it's actually very sobering to see just how common abuse is, not just in our nation, but in our world. One of the statistics that we found was that around the world, at least one in every three women has been in some way physically abused. That was shocking to me, and it was very depressing. And even here in America, nearly one-third of women report being physically abused. How does this emotionally destructive relationship, even though that it doesn't always go there, how does it eventually lead or lend to someone becoming abusive in another manner?
Well, it certainly can, because sometimes it starts off as verbal abuse, and when there's especially a domestic relationship, you know, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, those kind of relationships lend themselves to escalating, because when you don't stop the relationship, let's say we're talking to teenagers who are dating, and this is a very important concept for those who are listening who are parents or teen youth leaders, that, you know, kids need to know the important ingredients in a healthy relationship, a healthy dating relationship, a healthy friendship, because most of the time, abuse, at least physical abuse and sexual abuse, doesn't happen the very first time that someone meets someone. It starts in a milder form. But what happens is that we don't stop it. We don't, you know, we don't end the relationship. We don't say anything. We put up with it, and we act as if it doesn't matter or it's okay with us that this person did this. And so then the abuse can get more escalating and violent if we continue to allow the person to get away with bad behavior with no consequences.
You know, one of the things that always comes up when we talk about this topic is that verse, wives submit to your husbands, and how that is lorded over women so often that even if they're in an abusive relationship, the only grounds acceptable in the Bible for divorce is marital unfaithfulness. If you're being abused, the woman is supposed to suffer. It's like the sufferings of Christ. You know, there's all this type of stuff that the church will say. What should people do if they're in an emotionally destructive relationship if what they're hearing from the church is you just have to endure it the best you can?
Well, you know, I talk about that specifically in the book. How do we really look at biblical headship and biblical submission? What does God say about those things? Because submission is never forced. Biblically, you cannot force someone to submit. It's not called biblical submission then. It's called coercion. It's called manipulation. It's called rape. It's not called submission if you force someone to do it. And headship doesn't mean that someone gets their way all the time. Biblical headship is described as sacrificial servanthood of the other person. And wherever, you know, people get the idea that since I'm the man or I'm the head, whatever, whether you're the head pastor or you're the head of a family or you're the head of an organization, doesn't mean biblically that that means you get your way all the time.
Yeah.
And so we've misused those terms and we've beat them over the head for certain people to say you have to do this, when in fact that's not how God describes it. But the second half of the book, or the middle section of the book, Stopping It, how do we stop a destructive relationship? And change always begins with the person who is beginning to recognize it, because the only thing that you can begin to do is what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're, like you saw it, and you said, okay, I need to talk to my wife about this and change my part. But if you're the victim of a destructive relationship, you can't get someone else to change. You need to begin to change.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say to someone who feels like they're stuck? You know, there's some people say, well, there's no way for me to protect myself. I'll just have to endure it as best I can. I can't go anywhere. I can't do anything about it. And if it's leading into, you know, types of physical abuse, well, is there any way for them to get out of that type of situation? You know, some people say, oh, no, you need to stay there. But shouldn't people do whatever they can to protect themselves?
Well, you know, the Bible tells us that we are not to be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. And Paul tells us that in Romans 12:21. And I believe that it is good to protect yourself from a destructive person or from a violent person. Proverbs 27:12 says that the prudent see danger and take refuge. When Joseph saw that Jesus was about to be, or when the angel warned Joseph about Jesus being in danger, Joseph didn't just stay there and let it happen. He got up and left.
Mm.
And when Paul knew that he was going to be stoned, they put him over the wall in a basket. There is nothing unbiblical about fleeing a dangerous situation. In fact, it is good to do that. So we overcome evil by doing these good things. The second thing, it's good to expose the deeds done in darkness. You know, Ephesians 5:11 says that we're not to have anything to do with the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. And so it's good when we tell someone, when we get some help, when we go to the church or we go to a woman's shelter, whatever we need to do to expose what's happening in our homes. God calls that a good thing, and it helps to overcome the evil when we do that. The third thing is it's really good to learn to speak the truth in love, that when you lie and you pretend and you act as if nothing's wrong in your home, and then, you know, all of a sudden a catastrophe happens and no one knew, it's partly because you're not speaking the truth in love to others. You're not speaking the truth in love to your spouse. And maybe you're not even telling yourself the truth about how things really are that bad. And so it's good to speak truth to yourself and speak truth to others. In other words, what you're doing is so destructive to our marriage, to our testimony, that I will not continue to live as if this doesn't matter anymore. I'm going to have to separate until you get help for your problem. Mm-hmm. That might be a very excellent thing to do if someone's being physically abused.
Another thing that comes to mind that my wife pointed out was that, you know, the Bible also tells us that our body is a temple. And if we treat it as a temple of the Holy Spirit, we're not going to want to let someone else damage it, because, you know, it's not a good thing for people to damage the temple of the Holy Spirit, to damage the temple of God. The other thing, I going back to the idea of headship in the home, one of the things that's always bothered me about how people talk about, oh, yeah, the wife is supposed to submit, you know, if you look through that whole passage there in Ephesians, I always thought it was very interesting that the husband is the one who's called to love. You know, the wife isn't called to love. The wife is called to submit. But the husband is called to love. And some people think, oh, yeah, well, that's the easy job. But it goes on to say that we're to love as Christ loved the church. And
right.
When you look at the way Christ loved, that ain't easy. That ain't easy at all.
That's the sacrificial service. That is what headship is. It's a sacrificial service for the good of the other person. And it's not an either or, if you don't love, I don't submit, or if you don't submit, I don't love. It's both practiced, and when both practice, it's, you know, it's a, it can be a beautiful thing. And, you know, in men's defense, oftentimes women will say to me, well, if only my husband would do it right, I could submit easily. And I say to them, well, you know, I think submission's hard, just like love is hard. And submission, even when someone loves us perfectly, like God, God loves us perfectly, and we don't always find it so easy to submit to him either.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And so submission is a discipline. It's a discipline of the heart, just like learning to love biblically is a discipline of the heart.
Well, I again just really appreciate you writing this book, and it's all right with you. We'll see if our listeners have anything they want to call in and ask. 505-338-5790. If you got a question for Leslie about emotionally destructive relationships, give us a call. 505-338-5790 for all of your calls. We have James on the line. James, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, James?
Yeah, I was just calling in. I just tuned in and I was hearing what you guys were talking about. And I'm still basically a newlywed, about to celebrate our 2-year anniversary. And the thing I wanted, you know, just to say is that, you know, I may not have a lot of experience, but what I know is that when you truly love your wife, it's not just this giddy little feeling in the pit of your stomach. It's more than that. And the Bible also says, I'm not quite, it's in Ephesians, I read the New Living Translation. Mm-hmm. So in Ephesians, it also says the man is supposed to respect their wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get to true love, is to respect and trust and be there for each other and not to lie to each other, and especially not to hit each other.
Right.
Well, you know, James, I can say that I'm still basically a newlywed too, even though we've been married 8 years. So you can keep a newlywed feeling if you're willing to put in the work for it. Thank you so much for that, James. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Thanks, James. James, you brought up a very good point, because in order to have a healthy relationship with someone, whether they're a Christian or not a Christian, you need three essential components. The first thing that you need is some mutual caring. That you need to feel like the other person cares about your feelings, your needs. Doesn't mean you always meet them, but at least you care that they're hurting or that they need something, and you do what you can to try to meet that need. And so there's mutual caring, there's mutual honesty. Like you said, there's no lying, there's no deceit, there's no twisting things, there's no manipulating information, there's mutual honesty. And the third thing is mutual respect, that you care that this person is created in God's image and that you're not going to them in a disrespectful way, even mildly disrespectful. I can't tell you the number of couples who I work with in marriage counseling, and they don't necessarily have a destructive relationship, but they have a harmful relationship because the other person interrupts, they roll their eyes, they snicker at their feelings, all disrespectful things. And when you do that, love begins to grow cold.
Yeah.
And the marriage fails. That doesn't necessarily, again, mean it's always destructive like I'm talking about, but if you don't have respect, honesty, and caring, you don't have a healthy relationship.
You know, I have to wonder sometimes when I watch a lot of sitcoms on TV, which correct that statement. I don't watch a lot of sitcoms, but when I do on occasion sit down to watch a lot of them, when you see a marriage relationship, it doesn't seem all that nice. They're always sarcastic or sniping at each other, disrespectful to each other. The guy's always an idiot. The woman's always right. She uses sex to control the husband. You see all these types of behaviors, and it's used as entertainment. You know, like, oh, what a funny punchline. And I wonder how much of that seeps in to our everyday relationships. And I know people will think, oh, get out of here. TV doesn't affect me that way. Just because I watch all those, that doesn't have anything to do with my relationship. But I kind of wonder if that doesn't sort of contribute to some of these patterns, which then eventually can develop in. Because when I look at some of the ways married couples interact on TV, I always think I wouldn't want to be in a marriage like that. I'd feel terrible if my wife talked to me like that.
Well, that's right. And so when someone is chronically in a pattern of disrespect toward you, verbally, non-verbally, you said, I'd feel terrible. And after time, that terrible feeling begins to eat away at someone's health. It eats away at their ability to concentrate and to think and to feel normal feelings. It eats away at their spiritual life. It becomes destructive to their being.
And one thing I've noticed is that life doesn't have a laugh track. So even though there might be people laughing when that happens on TV, there's no one laughing in real life. We're talking with Leslie Vernick, author of the book The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, here on Raw Talk. We have Carolyn on the line. Carolyn, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, Carolyn?
Yes, I just wanted to share that the reason I'm a Christian today is because I was in an emotionally destructive dating relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I was able to get out of it was to totally give control to God.
Hmm.
And I was a Christian before, but I backslid pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in this relationship, I was in it for about a year and a half. I was in the military, away from home and family and my sense of comfort. And that's probably the reason why I stayed in it. I clung to the wrong person. And finally, when I was at the bottom of the barrel, the only way I had to look was up, and God was right there, just a prayer away. And as soon as I realized that, I was able to get out of the relationship, and I just had to completely cut off all ties with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there may be some situations where you don't cut off all ties. Maybe it's not emotionally destructive, but you should confront certain issues in the relationship. For instance, if somebody's discounting your feelings, if you're saying, you know, I feel this way about this situation, and somebody else says, well, you're being a little bit too sensitive or you shouldn't feel that way, well, you should tell that person, who are you to tell me how to feel about that situation? I mean, I'm acknowledging my feelings. You should respect my acknowledgement. And
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Leslie.
That's exactly right, and in the book I talk about that, that as you're developing new relationships, whether they be dating relationships or new friendships, one of the ways that you can tell if it's a healthy relationship is when you speak up and you share your feelings, and the other person may minimize them or may discount them or may disrespect them. If you say to them, stop that, that really upsets me, and they don't, run.
Exactly.
Because we all make mistakes, but a healthy relationship, the person will say, you're right, I'm sorry, you're entitled to your feelings, I shouldn't have done that, and they'll correct themselves, because again,
right,
we're all sinners. But if they don't and they blame you or minimize it or make fun of you, move on, because that person is not going to be a good relationship for you.
Now, Carolyn, let me ask you, how did committing your life to Christ turn things around for you? What was the difference there when you fully committed yourself to Christ? How did that make a difference in your life?
Well, pretty much what the Bible says, I put off the old man and put on the new. I was a completely changed person. I just, it was a complete 180 turn for me. I stopped all the sinful things I was doing, and I lived for God. I started getting into the Word. I found a good church, and I was able to stay out of that relationship, even though I would see this person every day at work. The Lord helped me get out of the relationship and stay out of it. Now, I did forgive this person, but I had to cut off all ties, all communication or contact with this person in order to stay out of it. And God would show me that, too. He showed me what I needed to do. And, you know, it worked. I mean, I know it was the Lord. The Lord was the one who basically showed me which way to go, what kind of behavior I should exhibit, and just how to get out of it and stay out of it and hopefully never get into something like that again.
Well, that's awesome, Carolyn. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm sure that'll be an encouragement to a lot of our listeners. Appreciate you calling in this evening.
Yes, thanks, Yo.
All right,
thanks,
you bet, Carolyn. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Well, if you have a question that you'd like to ask Leslie, give us a call, 505-338-5790. We're talking with Leslie Vernick, author of the book, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship. So if there's something like you that you'd like to ask, give us a call, 505-338-5790. I'm sorry, Leslie, I didn't mean to interrupt you. What were you going to say?
That's all right. I was going to say that, you know, I think we're focusing a little bit on dating or married relationships, but
mm-hmm.
I talk about my own destructive relationship in the book with my mother, and I've had so many phone calls and emails about mother-daughter relationships or father-son relationships or father-daughter relationships that are destructive, that even after you've become a grown-up, your parent is trying to control you, trying to tell you everything you should do or wear. I just talked to a woman this weekend. She said, you know, my mother is just totally upset with me because I won't major in this in school, and I won't do this with my hair, and I won't dress this way. And she's micromanaging my life as an adult. She's over 20 years old, and her mother is still trying to tell her what to do in every basic decision of life. And so sometimes our relationship with someone is a relative, and it might be even a parent. My mother was verbally abusive to me my whole life. And when I got to be a grown-up and I finally asked her to stop, you know, she just wouldn't. And she was extremely destructive to us, not just me, my brother and sister. And I finally had to cut off contact with her, like Carolyn did, in order for me to heal and to be able to figure out how to handle this person in my life who was destructive.
Well, like I said earlier in the program, reading through your book got me thinking about my relationships, not just with my wife, but with my siblings, my brothers and sisters, with my own parents, with the people I work with. It really opened my eyes to be more aware of how I interact with everyone, even strangers, just how I interact with people and how much that either does or does not reflect how Christ would interact with people. And honestly, I think that's the biggest thing I took away from your book. While I did, you know, find a few behaviors like, those aren't probably too good, let's work on that. Overall, the number one thing was, you know, just be aware of how you treat people, because it's so easy for us to just toss off words carelessly, making a joke, we're just trying to be funny, we're just making conversation, we're venting, quote unquote, our frustrations, whatever, and it's so easy for us to go down a path that could be emotionally destructive to someone without us even realizing it. And so that's one of the things I really enjoyed about your book, is how it made me look at all of my relationships. And like you said, not just our marriage relationships. We have Sally on the line. Sally, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hi. I just am looking for maybe some thoughts on this. I have been married now for 18 years. I have four children, and they range from 10 to 15. And my husband has refused to have a physical relationship with me for the last 10 years. And it's very challenging. Other than that, he's pretty good to me, but he refuses to have any conversation about it. When I tell him that, you know, it bothers me that, I have questions as to why this is happening, he just is like a stone wall. He just says, well, it's just, it's not that bad. And I said, well, I think it's that bad. It bothers me. And he totally, you know, I don't know if he discounts that. He just doesn't have any response for it. And we both happen to be, we both happen to be very attractive people. Mm-hmm. And it's challenging when other men notice me and compliment me, and I try to tone that down, tone myself down so I'm not noticed. And yet I told him it's very difficult. You put me in an awkward position of almost a sense of temptation to have a relationship with someone. I don't want to do that. I want to have the relationship with you. And his response is, well, that's between you and God. If you want to do that, that's up to you.
And so your husband is a Christian?
Yes.
And I mean, obviously you have had relations because you have four children, but why did he stop? Did he say?
No, that's the puzzling part. I asked, you know, first it had been maybe 6 months, and he just said, oh, I'm under a lot of stress. And then it was a year, and he said, well, my mom is sick, and I'm just, you know, I can't think straight. And then his mom died, and, you know, so it was this set of circumstances that went on for a year and a half or so, and then it turned into two, and then into four, and then into six, and then and every time I would bring it up, which was about once a year, he just doesn't want to talk about it. And I ask him if it's a physical problem. I ask him if he's, you know, if he has someone else that he's interested in, if he doesn't want to be in the marriage. And he just won't talk about it. I can't get him to talk about it. And the couple of times that I've tried to get into counseling, the minute the counselor tries to start talking about that, he has business meetings, or he can't make the appointment, or, gee, I don't think we're getting anywhere with these people. I don't think we need to continue with them. Which I don't feel that. I just think that they get too close to the subject,
right,
and he doesn't want to deal with it.
Well, at the very, I mean, without knowing more details, it's hard to speak wisely about this. It sounds like there's something that's troubling your husband about his sex life that, you know, and I don't know what that would be, but there's something
right.
that's troubling him, whether it's guilt or whether it's fear or whether it's other things, I don't know. But
right.
the fact that he's been indifferent to you about your needs
mm-hmm.
deeply concerns me, and obviously it's affecting you. And that would be, to me, the thing that you need to talk about is that it has hurt me deeply that you're totally indifferent to my needs, that you're so indifferent that you won't even tell me why. Maybe if I understood why, I could
deal with it. I
upset.
I've written pages of letters. I've had conversations. Please just talk to me about this. You know, I don't want you to be unhappy, and I don't want to be unhappy.
Right.
And
right.
And
so have you gone to anybody, like your pastor, about this and just said, I can't live like this. He's so indifferent to me. I don't know what to do.
I haven't, and I guess part of me, because of the children, I try to, you know, live as normal of a life as possible. But when you mentioned earlier that when you don't talk about something,
mm-hmm.
and you mask it, and then there's some big catastrophe, a lot of times people don't understand why the catastrophe has happened, you know, because
right.
everything has seemed so normal.
Right.
But because they're children, and I've never spoken ill of him to them. I always tell them, you know, respect your dad, even though he has, you know, quirks and what have you. I never point those out or anything to the children, so I try to just mask it. And
right,
yes.
and I'm not suggesting that you announce it to your children, but I am suggesting that perhaps it's time to say to your husband, since you won't talk to me, you know, the Bible tells us in Matthew 18, if someone has sinned against you, which your husband has now, you go to him and you talk to him. If he will not hear you, then you need to take someone else. And I give a process of this in the book, that how do you get an advocate for you to say, look, there is something really wrong here, and if we don't address it, it's going to really hurt the marriage much more severely than it has already. And you have to, I mean, you don't have to, but you invite him to say, you have to talk about this, and whether he chooses to or not. But he wants the perks of married life without the real commitment there. And he's not committed to your welfare. He's not caring about your suffering. And he's not willing to talk about it.
I think we're starting to lose you, Sally. I can't quite make out what you're saying. I hope that helps you out just a little bit. And again, what Leslie said, perhaps next step would be to go to your pastor. One of the other things I was going to ask you this evening, Leslie, now seems like a good time to bring it up. Where else can people go if they're looking for help, if they need answers? You know, Sally has a situation that obviously would take more time than we have on the radio to help
right.
out with. Where can people go if they have those types of issues that will take more than just the time that we have here on the radio to answer those questions?
Well, I think a person who educates themselves well is the best person. You know, they have to take responsibility for saying, I need to figure out what's wrong. So I would encourage them to, you know, get the copy of the book or go to the library and get some other books on abusive relationships or destructive relationships, but specifically those written from a biblical perspective, because one of the reasons I wrote this book with such biblical categories was I wanted a woman like Sally to be able to read that book, and actually women have written me and said, I've gone to my pastor with this book in hand and said, see, this is the biblical reasons why I can separate or why I need to enforce the consequences, because this behavior is so destructive to our family that if I don't, it's actually harmful to him. And that's been very helpful. So I would encourage people to educate themselves biblically. What does God say about relationships? What does he say about destructive relationships? What does he say that we're to do to resolve conflict with people? We're to be peacemakers, not peacekeepers. And Sally's a peacekeeper. She's just trying to keep the peace with her husband, but she's really not willing to, or hasn't been willing to, draw a line in the sand and say, look, we've got to deal with this problem. It's a huge problem in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, 505-338-5790. If you have something that you'd like to ask Leslie Vernick, author of The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, we got lines open for you now. It's been kind of busy, but you can sneak in now. 505-338-5790. 5790, if there's something that you'd like to ask Leslie Vernick as we continue to talk about the emotionally destructive relationship here on Raw Talk. Now, what else would you encourage people who are in destructive relationships to say in order to, as you pointed out earlier, you know, there comes a point where you have to speak up. What can they do and or say in order to get someone to listen to them, especially if they're facing someone who's totally indifferent?
Well, I give them three steps that they need to take. And the first step, if they're ready to speak up, just like I suggested with Sally, is that you begin to talk to the person. You begin to say, ouch, or don't, or stop, or whatever it is that this person's doing, this hurts me. It'd be like you're dancing with someone. Dancing with the Stars is a big show these days. Everybody can relate to that. But if you're dancing with your partner and they're constantly stepping on your toes and you don't say anything, how are they to know that they're hurting you? And so it's time for you to speak up and say in a very neutral voice tone without disrespect or contempt or even a lot of anger, if you can say it early in the relationship, you know, I don't like that. Stop doing that. That hurts my feelings or this bothers me. Now, in a healthy relationship, that person will respect you to stop. They will stop doing that. In an unhealthy relationship, they will laugh at you. They will blame you. They will act as if you're nuts and you know, don't know what you're talking about, but they will totally discount your feelings. And if that happens, then the next step is, instead of just speaking up, you need to stand up. And I use this illustration in the book and in my office when I counsel people, and they're very passive and they're refusing to do anything. I start, you know, we have a good relationship, and so I scoot my chair over to their chair, and I start gently kicking them in the shins, and they look at me like I'm nuts, and I say, okay, now what are you supposed to do here? And they laugh, and they say, okay, I'm supposed to say stop, don't, and they're sort of laughing now, and I say, well, you don't look very serious, and so I'm not going to stop. In fact, it's your fault that I'm kicking you because you're such a difficult patient that I just don't know how to deal with you anymore, or I'm having a bad day, and so it's just I can't help myself. And they look at me like I've lost my mind.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, and then I say, now what are you supposed to do? I'm discounting your feelings. I'm blaming you for doing this. And so then they get it. They stand up, and they say, stop it. If you don't stop it, I'm going to leave. And so you have to begin to say, if you won't stop stepping on my toes in the dance, I'm going to step back or stand up and dance a different dance. I'm not going to continue to go this route with you if you don't stop this behavior. And when they won't do that, if they continue to hurt you or they continue to verbally abuse you or continue to act indifferently like Sally's husband, then the next step is that you step back from the relationship. Because you cannot have a relationship with someone who's disrespectful, indifferent, abusive, deceitful. You can't. You can have a ministry to that person, but you can't have a healthy relationship.
Well, we have Denise on the line. Denise, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hi. I basically have a question about my ex-boyfriend and I are both Christians, and we're no longer together because I live a good Christian lifestyle, and he lived a lifestyle of dependent on who he was with, whether or not he wanted to be a Christian or he didn't want to be a Christian. Well, now we've broken up, and I'm trying to remain, or we're trying to remain friends with each other because we go to the same church, and we have a lot of the same friends. My question to you is, how do you remain friends with someone when you know they're not walking in they're not walking the Christian lifestyle? They're talking the Christian lifestyle, but they're not walking the Christian lifestyle, and they want to be friends with you, but all he does is confuse me because I catch him in lies, and he's telling me lies, and he's not even dating me. And I'm not sure, do I continue to be friends with this person, or is it truly emotionally destructive?
Well, it's an unhealthy relationship when someone lies to you. That's unhealthy. And so my encouragement to you is to not be friends with someone who continues to lie to you, because you cannot be friends. You can't. How can you have a friend with someone, a mutual friend, when they're not truthful to you? That doesn't mean you shouldn't be nice to him. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be respectful to him. It doesn't mean you can't say hello to him at church, or you can't, you know, go out socially as a group together. but just don't consider him in your inner circle of friends because he's not a truthful person.
And hope that someday he actually walks the walk that he's always talking.
Your job would be to speak the truth and love to him and say, you know, one of the reasons I don't want you as a friend, I didn't want you as a boyfriend, but I don't want you as a friend is because I can't trust you. You're not truthful.
Right.
I don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. You wear a different costume depending on whose party you're at.
Right.
Right?
And I have told him that, and he keeps saying, give me one more chance. I'll prove to you that I can be your friend. And I can be truthful, but he never comes around.
Right. So I think his fruit has shown you plenty. And if he wants to show you, then you can say, you know what, then show me in church. Show me the way you handle yourself as we interact in the group or as I see you develop as a ministry. But I don't want to be personally involved in your life because you're not a truth teller.
Okay. You know, on something else I would add, Denise, if you don't mind, it's always easier for someone to be pulled down than it is to pull someone else up. And very often as Christians, especially in the quote-unquote evangelism dating arena, we think, oh, if I just stay with this person, eventually I'll be able to pull them up and they'll really change and they'll see that Christ is what they need. And that may be true. I've known that to happen. I know people that have had that happen. But there's got to come a point where you realize, you know what, maybe it's not going to happen. All they're ever going to do is pull me down. And that's a point where you have to say, you know what, I don't want to be pulled down with you. We're just going to have to go our separate ways. And I don't know if that helps out at all, Denise.
Good point. I think that's what I needed to hear. I needed to hear exactly that I am being pulled down and I'm trying to pull him up. And it's just getting to be too much.
Well, don't let him pull you down. Okay. It's really not worth it.
And Denise, it's time for him to stand up on his own two feet.
Yeah.
You don't need to pull him up because he's old enough to know how to tell the truth himself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the best advice I've gotten. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Denise. You have a good evening, all right?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, next up we have Jesse on the line, and I hope you don't mind me jumping in there, Leslie.
Great.
Jesse, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say? Hey, Jesse. Hello? Jesse, just listen to the phone, not to the radio. Jesse? All right. Jesse, call back. Just listen to the phone and don't listen to your radio. You're going to get a little confused when you do that. So, Leslie Vernick, we got about 10 minutes left, and you're the author of The Emotionally Destructive Relationship. What are a couple other pointers that you would like to give out to people when it comes to the idea of avoiding, you know, toxic people? That's one of the terms I really like, toxic people. They're all around us. What would you tell people, how to avoid themselves, how to avoid toxic people? You know, how can we spot them coming?
How to handle it.
Because, yeah.
You know, people, just as we learned from these colors, people influence us. And God tells us that. And they can influence us for good and they can influence us for bad. And that's why God says that bad company corrupts good morals. He says, don't hang out with an angry person lest you become more like him. And so, people influence us, and so when someone is negative, toxic, abusive, they're bound to influence us in some way. And so one of the things that we have to remember if we're going to have to interact with a toxic person, whether it's in our family or at a family gathering or we're married to someone like that right now, that if you're in a toxic environment, you've got to put on some protective measures. You can put a gas mask on or, you know, gloves or whatever you're going to do in the physical realm. And spiritually, we need to do some things to protect ourselves and to emotionally distance ourselves so that we don't get as affected. Mm-hmm. And one of those is prayer. Certainly put on the armor of God. We've all read about that in Ephesians 6. But I really mean it because it's that breastplate of righteousness and that belt of truth that keeps you from that destructive verbal abuse. The other thing that you really need to do is begin to have healthy people around you. Do not let this destructive person isolate you. That's often what happens, is that you're too embarrassed or you don't want to tell anybody or you don't have any other friends. And, again, the more you're around this toxic person, the more toxic you'll feel. And so have other good, godly people around you, just like this last caller who started having other people in her church around her in her group. This male that she was dating didn't appear so wonderful anymore. And so it's very important to have healthy, good, godly people around us so that we can learn and heal and grow. And also just rehearse, practice ways that this person engages you negatively so that you can figure out how you're going to respond in a godly but firm way so that they don't push your buttons as easily as they do. Learn how to deal with conflict properly so that you don't allow yourself to get turned around and kidnapped into an argument that you don't want to have. Some people emotionally kidnap us and don't let us stop an argument or stop a disagreement. When we're done, we want to flee from that, and they just don't allow it. They continue to badger us and badger us and badger us. So practice how you're going to deal with that and how you're going to respond to that and how you're going to escape from that. And a wonderful example in the Bible of a woman who was married to a very destructive man, yet she was described as intelligent and beautiful, was Abigail. And she was a perfect example of how she learned to overcome evil with good. She didn't overcome Nabal, but she overcame Nabal's evil influence on her and that she didn't let it poison her.
Right. It's a good example. I guess some people are just walking biohazards, so we need to have our protective gear on. You wouldn't want to handle a biohazard without, you know, the whole mask where you sound like Darth Vader.
Right.
We have Jesse back. Jesse, welcome to Rot Talk. What do you have to say, Jesse? Hello.
Actually, you know, I think everything she said has been just absolutely amazing. I, several months ago, actually pulled myself out with the help of my family of a destructive relationship with my ex-boyfriend. And I think, you know, I think one of the things that you don't realize when you're in the midst of it is how long it takes to recover from something like that. Because I know one of the hardest things that happened was that even after we started dating, because it was a very controlling relationship, he still believed that he could tell me what to do, and he lied to me, and he lied to other people about me. And, you know, I still find it very awkward, and I think that was kind of one of my questions that I had, is that, you know, now he's going to be leaving to go off to basic training for the military at the end of the month here, and I'm somewhere between going, yes, you know, getting out of this because it's so difficult to handle being around him anymore. He still tries to be controlling and protective even though we're not even together anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And go for it.
I was going to say, you're absolutely right, Jesse, that the toxic effect stays with us for a long time. And so the last section of the book, the first is seeing it, the second part is stopping it, and the third part is surviving it. How do you survive that kind of relationship? And it's very important because sometimes someone beats us down verbally so much that we don't even see ourselves truthfully anymore. We see ourselves as stupid or incapable or ugly or fat or whatever this person has done to tear us down. And so it's really important that we begin to remind ourselves and to put healthy people around us who can help us to see ourselves truthfully and as God sees us. And so that we can also begin to see God differently, because oftentimes we see God as this person because God's angry with us, or he's, thinking we're a disappointment, that we failed him, or we weren't enough, or we didn't do enough to try to save this relationship. And so oftentimes I feel that people struggle in their relationship with God and in their view of themselves. And let go of this relationship, let go of the feelings of failure, and begin to allow God to heal you and to say, you know, this, you're not responsible to make a relationship work all by yourself. It takes two. And when one person is doing destructive things, you can't change that. The only thing you can do is take care of you.
Does that help you out, Jesse?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet, Jesse. Thank you for calling back. Leslie Vernick, author of the book, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, thank you so much for your time this evening, Leslie. Now, is there a place where people can learn more about you, get in touch, through email perhaps with you, if they have more questions, if they want advice on where to go for counseling, anything along those lines?
They can go to my website, and actually I have an old website, which is www.leslievernick.com, and then I have a new website that will be up in a couple of days, hopefully, and it's the same web address, and then if they want to go to it now, it's /new, but it will have the questionnaire that you talked about, whether you can see if you're in an emotionally destructive relationship. It'll have some examples from the book, chapters that they can read through, articles that I've written on this kind of topic, so that will be very helpful. It's not on the old website, it will be on the new website, and it's just not quite up yet. So have them visit. They can visit both, but but the new one should be up in a week or so.
All right. Well, like I said, you know, it was an eye-opening experience for me. You just never know. Sometimes you can't see your own behaviors, and so I was glad that I had a chance to encounter your book because it was something that opened my eyes to some things I need to change in my life. So thank you so much for that, Leslie, and thank you so much for your time this evening. And just hang on. I'll chat with you a little bit more right after the program, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Leslie Vernick, author of the book, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, here on Raw Talk. And again, I'll have copies of Leslie's book to give away tomorrow during the midday show with Yo. So if you tune in between 10 and 2 tomorrow, I'll be giving away copies of Leslie's book, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship. And let me just part with a thought. You know, Jesus told us one thing would fulfill all the law and all the prophets. He told us to love each other, to love the way that he did. You look at John chapter 13, verses 33 through 35. That was the command that he gave us, to love one another. And if you're doing something that is destructive to another person, take a look at Christ and how he loved people. He never tore people down. He never did anything to harm people. He always was building people up and trying to lead them into salvation. And, you know, for me, learning about what makes an emotionally destructive relationship reminded me how far I have to go to learn to love like Christ loves. And that should be our goal, first and foremost, as a Christian, is to learn to love how Christ loves. And the only way to do that is to learn how Christ loves. So pick up your Bible and read about how Jesus interacted with people, how he treated people, how he loved people. And you will learn what it's like and how you can have healthy relationships with people when you emulate Christ. And if you're going to bear his name, I hope you're doing that. I hope you're emulating him in everything you do, especially your relationships with other people. Next week on Raw Talk, you know, there's two things people aren't supposed to talk about, religion and politics. Well, you know what? What the heck? It's Raw Talk. We'll mix the two of them together. And next week on Raw Talk, we're going to talk a little bit about whether or not Christians should vote. I know some people feel that's a no-brainer. Absolutely, we should vote. Well, we're going to dive into that in a little more detail and get your opinion on that. We're a year away from the election, but it feels like the election is coming up like next week for all the news that you hear about it every day. And so we're going to dive into this topic a little bit more next week as we talk about the Christian and voting. So that'll be next week on Raw Talk. And the week after that, special guest Andrew Schwab will be joining us. I know, I've said that before, but this time he says for sure he's actually going to join us. And we're going to talk a little bit about this anti-church movement that seems to be becoming very in vogue. It's very in vogue to put down the church and talk about how the church is horrible and we need a new paradigm in order to live as Christians. Is that really the case? We'll examine that in 2 weeks from tonight here on Raw Talk. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Again, if you want to ask some more questions or get more information about tonight's program, send us an email, studio@m88.org. Thank you for joining us for Raw Talk here on M88.